Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Alyssa, I was thinking about this the other day. Were there any Disney movies that were like too formative for you?
Bambi.
How so?
Bambi scared the shit out of me. I feel like my whole life, all I've wanted to do is protect animals after Bambi. When Bambi's mother dies, it's fucked up shit. Like, all I do is think about Thumper. I have a sign outside my house that says, slow down rabbit crossing. What about you?
I think mine was The Little Mermaid. I think I watched it too much at a tender age, and it taught me to really overvalue one's singing voice as a way to attract a mate. I thought that it was, like, really important to have a good singing voice. Otherwise, the boys won't like you.
Erin, can I tell you something wild? I think this is one of the funniest things about our particular age difference is that I really couldn't watch movies. Like, they weren't available. Do you know what I mean? You had to go to the movie theater.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So I think the only one I ever saw was Bambi. That and E.T., which gave me nightmares. So I probably not okay.
All right, lots of news this week, but it's important news, and we live to inform you of what's going on. We've got a Florida abortion ban taking effect. It's a really, 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 really bad one, but luckily...
super bad.
Florida voters have a chance to rectify the situation come fall, so Floridians, please take note. We also talk about some good news from the courts.
Mm-hmm. Good news from the courts. We have some anti-trans bills that are being struck down. We have a batshit interview with Donald Trump in Time magazine that we talk about a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then we get into some new mammogram news.
New mammogram news. We also, of course, talk about Christie the Clown, the governor of South Dakota, who has a problem knowing what information would be helpful for people to know.
Yeah, she can't stop herself.
Having a bad headline week, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have an interview with Arizona Representative Lorena Austin. And
love them.
They give us a picture of what's going on in that state, which right now is under a very weird abortion ban that was written at a time when I think that doctors thought that uteruses made women crazy. very old-timey. I feel like saloon music should be playing every time we talk about it because it
gave them hysteria. Wasn't that the affliction era?
Indeed. They also thought the uterus like roamed around the body, like depending. it's a whole thing. Then we have a sanity corner / I feel petty. We got one of each for you this week, so please stick around. You are listening to Hysteria, the podcast that knows that farm stories should stay on the farm.
Abso-fucking-lutely.
So here's the thing. I mean, I think everyone at this point has talked a lot about Christy Noem killing her dog, writing about it in her book, and then being like, why is everyone talking about the fact that I killed my dog? I don't know, Christy. You seem stupid. When I texted one of my friends from home about the story, she was like, farm story should stay on the farm. That's like rule one. Like, you have to do weird and gross shit if you live on a farm. I've never heard of anyone having to shoot a puppy. That just seems over the top based on the farm
story. No, most people just rehome them, right? You rehome a puppy.
Maybe Christy doesn't know any other people.
She may not know any other people, but you know the one thing that I think? Because, you know, I've like done a book or two. This was the thing I thought was the funniest when I looked into the story. I'm like, who the fuck blurbed her book? Like, who wanted their name on the back of her book saying, this is a great book? And I just had one that I wanted to share because I feel like you will enjoy this. Okay. Quote, during COVID, Christy Noem proved she was the governor with the best instincts. This book is grounded in the same common sense and fearless fight for freedom. It's the reminder we need in these dark days to never lose hope in America. Get ready to be inspired. This from Rachel Campos Duffy, mom of nine, and co-host of Fox and Friends Weekend, also former Real World cast member. So here's a funny thing about blurbs. Sometimes people will be like, will you blurb my book? Here's a template. Fuck that. I always read the book because sometimes you never know what you're going to be blurbing. So Rachel Campos Duffy, I guess we know where you stand.
Rachel, okay, she was, I'm sorry, I don't want to shit on Rachel Campos Duffy because it's, like, too easy, but she was, like, too dumb to be on The View, you know? Like,
She was too dumb to be on The Real World.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, she was on the best season of The Real World. One of the
she
best.
Was. You think she and Puck are still friends?
I don't know if Puck is even still alive.
Oh, shit. That's a good point.
Oh, yeah. He seems like a skateboarding accident at age 43 kind of guy. Yeah, Kristi Noem was on the VP shortlist, and for some reason, I think wants off, maybe.
Or do you think she thought this was going to help her out?
That's two good questions, two huge questions. In her book about her life, she wrote down, or more realistically, she paid somebody to write down for her, the story of the fact that she had a puppy, a 14-month-old puppy that was, like, not a good bird dog. And then killed some of their chickens. And so she killed it. And she also decided to kill a goat. Sometimes there are things that people write in books that I'm like, that should be for your therapist, you know?
That should be for your notes app.
Or that should just be kept in the lockbox of your dark spirit and taken to the grave.
Yes, yes. Not everything is meant for everybody.
Yeah, I don't know. It's sort of like this weird, look, I grew up in a state over, two states over from South Dakota. My dad hunts pheasants in South Dakota, like semi-familiar with the culture, right? And my dad grew up on a farm. We grew up raising animals. Like, there's gross shit that happens, right? Like,
yep.
Really unpleasant things, like an injured animal that needs to be humanely killed and you don't have time for the vet to come.
Right.
Like, but those are like extreme circumstances that are like horrible for the people that have to act out what's right, you know?
Like they're not, because those things are real and they're nature and they're the world. They're not a bad pet mom, Kristi, who didn't crate her puppy and then the puppy killed the chickens. A lot more human error than puppy error, I feel like, in this whole scenario.
Here's something that came to me as I was like reading about this like Kristi Noem dog killer news cycle. Could it get worse? I don't know. It does seem Veepish to me.
Like, oh, yes.
Like, like VP Myers thinking about like appointing somebody to their cabinet, and then it comes out in their memoir that they killed their puppy, and we're like, what? This is a thing people do on farms. Kristi, it is not a thing people do on farms.
It's not. It's not.
What if she made it up in this weird like fit of misguided?
Utterly possible.
Yeah, misguided.
Utterly possible.
Like Midwestern pick-me-hood? Like, she's a pick-me who went too far?
Erin, a person who would write about this is also a person who would think it was cool to make it up.
Yeah, and, you know, just taking a step back and looking at how Republicans tend to view women who claim that things happened to them or that they did things. They view people as liars all the time. They confess by accusing. So I don't know. Look, people are pretty mad. I think it's a weird thing to say, regardless of whether or not she did it. She could be making it up. Let's consider that possibility.
All of the above.
She does. I mean, her teeth are lying to you. They're not real. What else?
She's another victim of chicklethood.
God, you know, you get the new teeth and then you publish a book about killing your dog and everyone
hates it.
You
get the new teeth, you take them out at night, you put them on the nightstand.
I mean, it's like, not if they're veneers, they grind
that
shit down.
No, I'm just saying, hers look like you take them out at night. They look like Halloween teeth.
Yeah. Oh, man, that is a shame. Right now, we're kind of in the point in the Veep stakes. I hate that term, but it's what came to my mind at this time of day.
Mm-hmm.
We're at a point where, because it's Donald Trump doing the picking, we're seeing a lot of people who want to be picked lining up to humiliate themselves, because that is what Donald Trump tends to like. But he also doesn't really reward the people who have humiliated themselves on the other side of things.
Totally. He does not like a backlash.
No. But he kind of, I think he likes seeing how far people are willing to go to kind of debase themselves.
It is the deep, Aaron, it is his origin story. It is the apprentice. It is everything. He lives for this.
Right. And he only knows how to do one thing. He's not like coming up with new things. This is just his MO. This is what he does.
You think he called Chrissy, say she's fired?
I don't know. He does seem a little doddering. There was a concerning interview in Time magazine that came out this week that was published. You can read the transcript. It's an 83-minute read, according to... Okay, so you know how at the top of, like, articles now, they're like, this is going to take you 5 minutes. It said, this is going to take you 83 minutes. And I was like, no, it's not. I'm a fast reader. Yes, it is.
I skimmed his, and then I found summaries.
But I can't skim because the language, the way that he uses language is, it does not make sense. It doesn't make sense. I'm like, what is happening right now? I feel like I just got off a plane in a country where I have taken 2 years of middle school that language. And I'm trying to understand, like, instructions from the gate agents. Like, I don't. What are you talking about? Anyway, it was concerning because he seems like his brain is broken. In a pretty bad way. But it was also concerning because he made some comments, Alyssa, that you noted about abortion. And I have a theory on it. But first, I'd like to hear, you know, I know you took extensive notes. Like, what were the comments? What was the context? She's holding up a note card.
I can't help it. With Trump, you got to write it down because it's so crazy. You might forget it. So Trump, again, it was an interview. He was asking questions. When asked about abortion, Trump said that it should be up to states to make all decisions on abortion, including, Aaron, if states want to monitor pregnancies to know if someone had an abortion.
Okay, so he thinks that tracking pregnancies and, like, periods and shit is fine. Because as we have discussed on this show, anywhere from, like, a quarter to half of pregnancies end in miscarriage. So, like, in order to track pregnancies, you kind of actually have to track, like, periods.
Right, and Aaron, here's the thing about this that actually just made the hair on the back of my neck stand up, is that he has dabbled in this before. Remember, he had that absolute maniac that he picked who had no experience to run the Office of Refugee Resettlement that was tracking the periods of migrants.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so here's my theory on this. I think Donald Trump has been coached about how to handle the abortion question because it, I'm sure that their internal research, but also external research obtained by looking around can bring you the information necessary to conclude abortion is not a winning issue for Republicans. Abortion bans are not a winning issue for Republicans. In fact, they are a real, like, shooting yourself in the dick issue. And I think Donald Trump was trained. He had someone sit him down and be like, Donald, this is just what you're going to say over and over again. It is up to the states. It is up to the states. It is up to the states. But when people ask him questions like, okay, so, like, could a state track pregnancies, like they, I mean, they didn't mention this, but that's literally what they did in Romania.
Right.
Underneath the totalitarian government where, like, millions of people fled and women died. And it was, like, decades long in Romanian orphanages. Ask your parents. I'm just going to say that. Ask your parents about what was happening in Romania because that's what they were doing, tracking pregnancies. But I think Donald Trump is so, like, uncreative, unthoughtful, and he was so trained on this issue that he's just repeating, leave it up to the states no matter what absurd proposition is put in front of him.
I think that that is correct. I also think, though, that if someone actually has no ability to, for independent thought, that that's, like, highly concerning if they might be president.
Yeah. Yeah. I also get the impression that Donald Trump is, like, super grossed out by the female body and reproduction. Oh,
don't you just want to throw a tampon at him?
I just want him to watch a video of a human birth. I want him to watch a video of a human birth. No, I bet you $1 million. I don't have $1 million, but I bet you $1 million. He was not in the room with any of his wives.
Totally agree.
When
totally
his children agree. Were being born. And, like, in the 80s, you should, you know, you should be in the room. It wasn't, yeah, like, weird to, yeah, anyway. I bet he wasn't there.
It was past the period of being outside with a cigar.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think he just kind of just hammered on the answer that he was trained to give rather than think for himself because he's lazy. During that interview, he also mentioned that he would be open to a nationwide mifepristone ban.
Yes. His allies are very pro-Comstock Act.
Yeah. I hope that people keep asking him about that because it is really what
it only helps. It only helps us. Also, this is my favorite. He also said in the interview that he's heard because he's always hearing things. He's heard people like his dictator talk. He's like, I've heard people like when I say I'm going to be a dictator. People like it.
Okay. Journalists who get the chance to interview Donald Trump, I'm sure there are so many of them who are listening to this podcast, ask from who? Who? What people?
One name. Yeah. One name that you're not related to.
Yeah. Who said that? Like, just follow up. When he says people keep coming up to me. What people? What people, Donald?
I mean, the only people he's seeing are in court, so.
Oh, God. And he's falling asleep. Poor little baby. Okay, so we're talking about leaving things up to the states. As we are seeing now, I'm not sure that – it's funny that this is, like, Donald Trump's best case scenario for discussing the abortion issue. Like, leave it up to the states. I guess maybe internal research found that it's more palatable than, like, no, we're going to do a nationwide ban at 15 weeks.
Right.
But then, you know, alongside of him coming out and being like, look, I'm so reasonable, let the states decide. Every week there's a new headline. This week, Florida's abortion ban is going into effect, and it's a bad one. As we record today on May 1st, you'll be hearing this on May 2nd or later, Florida's six-week abortion ban has officially taken effect. So Floridians, stay away from sperm and Nick Cannon. If healthcare providers provide abortions, they could be fined or jailed for up to 5 years. This severely impacts the South. People in Mississippi, Alabama, Tennessee, Arkansas, Louisiana, and more would travel to Florida to access abortions after their state signed strict abortion laws. Now people in Florida and that entire region have to go to other options, which could be costly or downright impossible. Or, you know, force people to resort to extra legal means, self-administered abortions. In some contexts, it's like semi-safe to administer them yourself.
Right.
But if you are somebody that doesn't have like a lot of savvy, a lot of information, it's pretty, oh God, I just think people are going to hurt themselves.
Here's another thing, Erin. If you are a pregnant person, why would you go on vacation to Florida?
Yeah, don't.
Like, this is fascinating to me. It is their number one industry, I think, or top something. And why would you go? God forbid something happened. You had to go to the hospital. You had to go to the doctor. Why would you ever go to Florida? They're really making a mess for themselves.
Yeah, here's the thing. Like, we have seen all over the country that these abortion bans are impacting pregnant people's ability to access emergency care and to access health care. Doctors are afraid to take care of patients who are pregnant because they're afraid they'll run afoul of abortion bans if what ends up happening is that an abortion is necessary for this person's care. I think I've mentioned this before in the pod, but my girlfriends from college are all getting together for the first time in like a bajillion years. And we were originally going to all meet in Texas because it's we live all over the place and it was just physically
in the middle.
Yeah. It's just easiest to get to. And like Austin has enough stuff to do for a weekend before you really sit there and think like, is Austin good? And then you're like, no, it's not. But, you know, it's fine. So we were going to go to Austin, and two of us, over the course of planning it, became pregnant. And so my friends were like, we're actually uncomfortable with making two pregnant women travel to Texas because, you know, my friend and I both, like, are pregnant with, like, wanted and planned babies.
Right.
But, like, what if something happens to one of us? And the only way we can get health care or treatment for whatever happened is for us to be, like, near death. It's just not... It's not safe.
Why?
It's not safe.
There are other choices.
Yeah, so we moved it to California. And, you know,
much better.
A few weeks ago, there was somebody who was scheduled to give a talk. I think it was a physician, not an OBGYN, but another physician who was scheduled to give a talk at a conference in Texas, but she was pregnant. And she's like, I'm not going there. It's not safe. Don't go to Florida. Don't go to Texas. If you are a matriarch or patriarch of a family and you are planning a large group vacation, consider not planning one to Texas or Florida for your extended family.
I hear the Poconos are making a comeback.
Yeah, Poconos are nice. California is great. I mean, we're
out. The Catskills.
We're out of room here, but there are plenty of hotels. So if you want to come, come out here. But yeah, it's become very dangerous. And the Florida law has like no exceptions. It is it's Texas style. Basically, you have to be physically on the verge of death before a provider can give an abortion. And yeah. But luckily, this fall, Floridians will have the opportunity to vote on Amendment 4, which will codify the right to abortion up to 24 weeks in the state's constitution. And in the meantime, a reminder that Mother's Day is coming up and nothing says I love you like a vasectomy in a red state.
Makes a great last-minute gift, Erin.
Absolutely. Also, if you want more information on this, especially if you live in the South, go to votesaveamerica.com/fuckbans.
Well, Erin, in slightly better news, we have a couple of wins for trans people in the U.S. this week. According to Erin in the Morning, the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that, first, gender identity is a protected characteristic, and two, banning gender-affirming healthcare is unconstitutional. So Medicaid cannot ban any treatment of gender dysphoria. This is good.
Yeah, that's great.
This is good. The decision will impact all states, especially Republican-led ones that have been pushing anti-trans bills. The ruling derives from bills in two states in particular, North Carolina and West Virginia. The bill, Erin, it's like you got to try hard to be this shitty. The bill in North Carolina prevented their state employees from accessing trans health care. The bill in West Virginia prevented trans people enrolled in Medicaid from using their insurance for gender-affirming surgeries. So, South Carolina might feel the impact of this ruling soon. At the end of May, the state Senate is set to debate a bill that would prevent trans youth from accessing gender-affirming care.
Okay, I'm sorry. I say this respectfully, semi-respectfully. West Virginia, don't you have bigger problems?
Honestly!
Don't you have bigger problems? There is a finite amount of time in your day as a lawmaker. Should you be allotting this much of it to this?
No.
No.
Erin, you know what I would do if I were in West Virginia? If I were a lawmaker in West Virginia? I would be spending my time thinking of worker retraining programs so that all the coal miners could have modern jobs.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would do.
I would, yeah. There's a lot of problems there that have yet to be addressed or fixed.
Opioids.
Yeah. Look. Yeah, you can care about more than one thing at once. I'm just saying, why are you caring about this thing
so much?
It's bonkers. It feels like pathological at this point. Look, we are not lawyers. We're two American non-lawyers.
Two nice ladies.
Which is fine. I thought about going to law school, and then I looked at how much it costs, and I was like, that's dumb. But
can I just say something?
What?
You'd be such a good lawyer.
It's because I cannot not argue.
I know. It's so funny because I am the opposite of that, and that's what I love most about you, because I know that's why I would want you to be my lawyer, because I'd be like, I didn't do it. Don't you believe me? And you would come in and you'd save me.
Oh, I would. Okay. Well, you got to get me a cape first, a homemade cape, and then I'll
get you a cape and a law scholarship.
A law scholarship. So here's the thing. I don't know what the path forward is for supporters and foes of this, but considering the decision was made at the circuit level, we can only assume that somebody is going to make an appeal, try to kick it up to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has surprisingly not been the shittiest when it comes to trans issues and has kind of almost not wanted to deal with them. It seems like they've dodged a lot, or they've tried to write like very narrow rulings that ultimately the trans side of the issue prevails. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen here. But I feel like this is a pretty sweeping ruling declaring that gender identity is a protected characteristic. So that is exciting. Rare good news. And on that note, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we are speaking to Representative Lorena Austin, an Arizona state representative, who can give us a rundown of how things are going under that state's circa 1864 abortion ban. A quick programming note. On Wednesday, the Arizona Senate voted to repeal the state's 1864 abortion ban. The repeal means that Arizonans are now living under a newer ban, one that cuts off abortion access at 15 weeks, with exceptions only to save the life of the mother. And judging by how that's gone in Texas and Idaho, well, let's not get ahead of ourselves and treat it like it's great news. This interview was recorded on Tuesday when the Senate was expected to repeal the old ban, but had not yet done so. And so if you hear language that it's coming or that things are about to happen that have already happened, that's why. And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for fans of Arizona State Route 89A, but only if they're not the one driving. In April, the all-Republican Arizona State Supreme Court ruled that an 1864 total abortion ban could take effect in the state. This was met with immediate nationwide backlash from everybody from President Biden to former President Trump. And meanwhile, on the ground in Arizona, those needing abortion care were left in a lurch as state Republicans scrambled to get out from under weeks of bad headlines and state Democrats tried to protect Arizonans' rights. Our guest today is a Democratic member of the Arizona State House representing a part of Maricopa County, including their hometown of Mesa. They're also the first non-binary legislator in the state after their election in 2022. Representative Lorena Austin, glad to have you back.
So happy to be back. Sincerely, thank you for having me.
Okay, so it seems like it's been a pretty wild few weeks in the Arizona State House, to say the least. Can you walk me through what your life as a legislator has been like since the state Supreme Court allowed the ban to go into effect?
Yeah, it has been something that we knew was going to happen. Like this decision was coming out, and the day before, you know, the Democratic caucus had gotten together and said the ruling is going to come out the next day and invite us to the governor's office. So a few of us who were able to go to the governor's office that morning when the ruling came out, and then just to feel the energy in the room when some of us elected officials were standing there and just saying it's territorial. I just remember hearing it's a territorial ban, and just the air just let out of the room. And since then, it has been, obviously, as you've seen, kind of just a nonstop conversation around the state and really jumping into action to figure out, you know, what was the best pathway forward. And Democrats knew the best thing immediately to do was to enact the clean repeal. And so we tried that for weeks. And the bill put forth by Representative Stephanie Saul Hamilton that first week after, immediately we tried to suspend the rules to put motion to put the bill on the board to vote on it, to do the clean repeal, to take away this 1864 Civil War era abortion ban where the consent for a girl to get married was 10 when we were still enslaving people, when it would have just put every person in Arizona, you know, who was going to potentially be pregnant in jeopardy, literally their lives in jeopardy, would jail doctors, would punish people getting abortions. And so the first week when we tried to suspend the rules to motion and put on the board, it was immediately stopped, immediately recessed. And we tried a few more times that day. And when we realized that wasn't going to happen, I think, you know, it's become quite well known now, the acts of the Democratic caucus to immediately, you know, put the Republicans in check and say shame. And, you know, I think that was the word that went worldwide, right? Like, how can we allow this to happen when a clean repeal would have just taken it back to the 15-week abortion ban that was already in place? Meanwhile, this past whole year, Arizonans have been collecting signatures for Arizona abortion access to amend our constitution. And so there's been so many pieces happening. Thankfully, last week, the House was able to get it finally on the board, and it did pass. And so tomorrow, it is going to the Senate. And so that is where all eyes are currently right now in the state of Arizona, is on the Senate vote tomorrow here in Arizona. So we will see what happens in just almost more than 24 hours from now.
So, you know, I'm not going to ask you to armchair psychoanalyze your Republican colleagues, but I'm so curious as to why they let this become such a spectacle when they could have just allowed the vote to happen right away. Like, what do you think is going through their heads, if anything?
I mean, it is shocking, but I think we really need to understand that there's a political narrative, and it is extreme. And there are people that do believe that this Civil War era ban should stay in place. Because the only thing that ban said is in case of the, you know, the life of the mother is in danger, but does not account for anything else. Does not account for rape or incest, does not account for ectopic pregnancies, does not account for any complication that could happen with a pregnant person. And I think, you know, we really need to get over this idea that pregnancy is this mystical, you know, Disney fairy tale, when we know it's a very complicated thing. And more than that, it's a very personal thing. So we're talking about, you know, medical freedom for a lot of people. But I can say, it is so alarming to hear some of the comments from my colleagues from the Republicans. I mean, they absolutely believe in this extremist view that, you know, whatever shall be will be, when this is not 1864, this is 2024. I mean, we have so many, thankfully medicine has come so far, but we still have a long way to go in how, you know, we deliver care for pregnant people in the state. And why would we not allow that care to be given? And more, furthermore, why would not allow those personal decisions to be made by the person who is receiving medical attention and their provider and their family and whoever they choose, you know, to be involved in that process? And it should not be legislators, I can tell you that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you bring up a really interesting point that I think that Dobbs, aka Roe, being overturned really got a lot of Americans thinking about how weird it is to leave bodily autonomy up to a vote by elected officials. Do you think Arizonans, assuming that this 15-week abortion ban passes, this newer, shinier ban, do you think Arizonans will be satisfied with a 15-week ban? Or do you think they just want the government out of their business?
Yeah, absolutely not. I think they want the government out of their business, and which is why this abortion access ballot initiative has been so integrally important. But we also know that there's a scam on the other side coming our way very soon, because the Republicans accidentally leaked their plan to confuse the abortion ballot initiative this year. They accidentally sent it to all the Democratic members as well. And it literally lays out their plan to use referendums, which has been their workaround for the governor this year, for Governor Hobbs. So instead of passing a bill through their majority and having her veto it, they are now sending initiatives to the ballot because we have that rule here in Arizona. So we know that they are going to send multiple ballot initiatives. And specifically, it says in this scheme that it is to dilute the vote from the abortion access ballot initiative. So we have to be on our guard this election cycle. The ballot will already be extremely long, which I think is to induce voter fatigue. And so this is another thing that we have to, you know, keep a top of mind when we're voting this year, is that there is a very specific scam that they have to make sure that Arizonans do not have bodily autonomy and their rights to make their own medical choices.
Oh my gosh, that is so dastardly. It seems like, despite the sort of cartoonish, like, tomfoolery attempted by Republicans in Arizona, that there's a lot of energy behind the Arizona Abortion Access Act. As a public servant in the state of Arizona, are you seeing that energy reflected in your voters?
Absolutely. I was just at an event this weekend and mentioned that we would have the petition for people to sign, and people from different counties were coming to sign this you know, ballot initiative, because it is that important. And because I think Arizona voters are not going to be fooled about this election cycle. It has been on top of mind since Dobbs came out. And we do see the Republicans really, really doubling down on this issue, which I think is going to be really disastrous for them in this upcoming election cycle. They're continuing to double down. They currently have filed ethics complaints against a few of our members as well for what happened after they decided not to put the repeal on the board. And so they really are. I don't know. I really don't know. If I was this Republican strategist, I don't know what. It's just an unpopular opinion. It is not something we have seen it time and time again. We saw it in Kansas. We've seen it in other states. People really, really, really have strong opinions about this issue. And it's because I think a lot of people either know someone or have personally experienced, you know, something happening with their pregnancy. I know so many people. I know people in my family, regardless of their perspective or thought, you know, on abortion, they firmly believe that that decision should be left up to them, that that should be left up to, you know, the person who is pregnant and their family and their provider and whoever they want involved in that decision, not government officials.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about the changing political landscape in Arizona. Arizona used to be a deep, deep red state. I believe a couple cycles ago, there was a supermajority of Republicans and a Republican governor. But now things have shifted a little bit. Can you tell us a little bit about that shift and what Democrats have in mind for once the shift is complete, hopefully, after this next election cycle?
Yeah, I think a lot of people, like you said, might be surprised that we've come this far. I know even in my district, I think people are still surprised that someone who looks like me is representing them here in Arizona. But I think that really is telling of the tide shifting. And also generationally, we're seeing a lot of shift, right? We're seeing a lot of younger people being active. We're seeing whether that's through, you know, social media, but they have a lot of information now. And I'm so excited about this younger generation coming, you know, into the fold of civic engagement. They're so smart. They're communal. They care about each other. So I do think we're going to be, you know, seeing a sweeping landscape change here. But I think for Democrats, we want to do very, common sense things, right? Like invest in our public education. I mean, right now we have universal vouchers that are literally draining our budget without any accountability measures tied to them. The last number I saw was, I think, approximately $750 million that has drained our budget. It'll be upwards of $1 billion soon. It was projected to be only $33 million. And so if we can rein some of these, you know, types of things in, it'll allow us to invest more in our public services. We can actually feed our kids at school for merely $4 million. We can provide those free meals, especially as we're seeing COVID dollars, right, going away. I think we're looking at election protections and integrity. We're looking at, you know, investments, bigger investments in climate change, things that will actually, you know, help everyday Arizonans. I'm running a bill next year again, didn't get a hearing, but that would provide an IRA program at the state level for people who don't receive pensions right now at the state level if you're not a state or government employee. But it's free to the employer, but it would allow the employee to deduct whatever they want from their paycheck into a retirement account, right? So think of our people in the service industry. I worked in, you know, restaurants and grocery stores for a better part of my, you know, adult life, and I never had that option to have a pension or a retirement. So I think just really common sense solutions the Democrats want to put forward that are really going to work for working people here in Arizona.
Well, that is all very exciting. You're running for re-election this year. How's the campaign going? And what have you learned to do differently from your 2022 run?
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's so different. I think for me, you know, and people can come at me, I represent the best district in the state. I'm so, so lucky to
I know
my colleagues will come after me hard, but I truly believe that. And I have been so happy and so lucky to, even though I've been in session, you know, these past few years now, to just stay active and involved in my community. It's such a budding, growing community. We're seeing a lot of younger people and families move in, a lot of infrastructure happening, new businesses and local, really investing in local. I'm so lucky to work with the city of Mesa and city of Tempe, who've just been so supportive and taking the initiatives of things like tackling our climate issues and investing, you know, in solar power or investing in electric vehicles, like city of Mesa's investing in those types of things. And that's so, I'm so lucky because of the state, I'm not able to do as many things. So I'm so lucky to work with two cities that are so invested in building our community. And, but however, I am in the most competitive district in the entire state. So there's nothing closer numbers wise. And to be quite honest, I think a lot of people were surprised that Democrats swept our district. And so I don't know that they were paying as much attention, but they are now. So we are seeing, I think, a lot more fight on the Republican end. But I think, you know, what we've been able to do is really build that community and really, you know, for me, walk my talk. You know, I show up, I speak with our community members. I've been able to meet with so many new small business owners and just really try to be the person that I said I would be. You know, come back and talk to you, not just come knock on your door once because I want you to elect me, but because I actually care. Let's connect you to those community resources. Let's see what kind of, you know, public programs we can help you in. Do you need to, you know, apply for summer camp? Well, you got to do that now, right, before all the spots fill up. So I think it's just those everyday interactions that I love to have with people, and I'm so grateful I've been able to do that this entire time.
Representative Lorena Austin, thank you so much for joining us today and for giving us a rundown of what's going on in Arizona. We can't wait to have you back after Arizonans have enshrined access to abortion in state law and after you've won re-election. And listeners, head to votesaveamerica.com/fuckbans to learn more about Arizona. I wonder what they think about the bans.
Love it.
We will be right back. Alyssa, more health what? News. You have something you wanted to flag for our listeners.
Oh, Erin, I could go on about this one forever. Okay, so to all our listeners with breasts, listen up. A panel of medical experts now recommend getting mammograms beginning at the age of 40. This recommendation reverses the task force's previous one from 2009, which said to start regularly checking at 50. Now, Erin, here's my thing with all this. Prevention. Okay, if you want to be just a rabid capitalist, right, which insurance companies are, prevention costs so much less than treatment. Mm-hmm. So I don't know why we have to keep arguing about when people can get mammograms as if we're going to bankrupt America if women at 40 or younger are getting mammograms. Now, the reason that the task force made this recommendation is because back in January, the Journal of the American Medical Association published a study about the surge in rates of cancer in women below the age of 50, and it puzzled medical experts. They say the increase... Here's a wild one for you, Erin. The increase during the past two decades has mostly been driven by breast cancers fueled by the female hormone estrogen.
No.
What?
No. Okay, sorry. Erin? No, no, no. The like, whatever. I'm sure there are a lot of people who know a lot more about menopause and HRT than I do that are just banging their heads against their desks right now. But anyway,
beyond.
But
and the one thing that this does not cover is, so, Erin, half of women over 40 have dense breast tissue. I have dense breast tissue. I've been going through this for almost 8 years now. You have historically had to go, you get your mammogram, they squish your titties down, and then they tell you, you have dense breasts, you have to come back, right? And I have to come back.
Can't they just tell by feeling? Why do they have to squish them?
Here's the better thing, Erin. How come after my first mammogram, when they identified I have dense breast tissue, why have I had to go through this rigmarole of every year going for the mammogram, them once again telling me I have dense breast tissue? Guess what? It's not getting less dense. Then I have to go back for the MRI or ultrasound, right? Why can't I just every year get the MRI or ultrasound to check my boobies? But such is not the case. And it's weird because doctors, as part of this task force, said, quote, no scientific evidence proves that supplemental imaging by either MRI or ultrasound reduces breast cancer progression. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, insurance tends not to cover these additional tests, often forcing higher-risk patients to pay out of pocket for this helpful care. Minoritized populations like Black and Jewish people are more likely than others to get and die from breast cancer before the age of 50. Hmm. So the one thing I wanted to flag for our listeners to pay attention to, hysteria fave, Connecticut Rep. Rosa DeLauro introduced the Find It Early Act in 2022 with other hysteria fave, Katie Couric, who also has dense breasts and whose breast cancer was detected with additional screening. The bill would require insurance companies to cover additional screenings for women with dense breasts. So while DeLauro says this is a step in the right direction, it still misses the mark and fails to protect women with this kind of breast tissue.
Okay, so I have a couple of questions. Why do insurance companies feel like in order to obtain care, we need to run through an essentially like American Ninja Warrior course of obstacles?
Erin,
it's so ridiculous.
I am like in a flotation device with a like foam noodle just trying to like beat my way through the insurance system.
No, honestly, maybe it's more like what's that an old Nickelodeon show? Legends of the Hidden Temple?
Yes.
And then like a monster comes out and is like, no, you're not pre-approved. Ah.
Take your dense breasts and go back to start.
But I do have a second follow-up question. I recently had to get an MRI, and mm-hmm. it took me, I was considered like, the reasoning behind my getting an MRI was considered urgent.
Right.
And it took me 3 weeks to get an appointment in a major metropolitan area. So how is our existing medical infrastructure going to handle that? Because I don't, honestly, like, I think that it's a really good idea to make more effective imaging available to people who cannot reliably be diagnosed with a mammogram.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like, how are we going to do that? Like, what is the reality of our medical infrastructure?
Our medical infrastructure, Erin, is not keeping up with science.
Yeah. I know, but it's like I feel like people will have to wait like 6 months, 8 months for these appointments.
I agree, though, still better than not getting it at all.
Mm-hmm. Don't we have blood tests at this point? Shouldn't we?
There are. Oh, one last thing that's worth noting: this recommendation does not apply to women with a personal history of breast cancer or those with a genetic marker for the condition, like the BRCA gene. They're advised to be screened earlier and more often.
Okay, so you can get a blood test to screen for the gene, which is probably a lot cheaper than getting into a Legends of the Hidden Temple style brawl with your insurance company in order to get advanced imaging that would be helpful for your peace of mind, but. If you're not like a super high risk person, you maybe will end up not ultimately needing. So like take the blood test first.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good to know. Wow.
Take the blood test. We just need to use all the tools at our disposal.
Yeah. Another tool at our disposal that I would really like to see lawmakers tackle is environmental factors that contribute to cancer.
Totally.
Why are women who are between 40 and 50 developing breast cancer? I do not believe that it's estrogen. I'm sorry. I don't.
It feels like there must be other things at play.
I feel like there might be something in our air and water that is contributing to increased rates of cancer in young people. I don't know.
Well,
I'm just saying.
You know what's funny, Erin? I read an article years ago that said women in America suffer from perimenopause almost worse than any other continent because of all the parabens in our products.
Oh, God. I read something this week that said that women in perimenopause are 40% more likely to suffer depressive symptoms, which is interesting because that aligns with the time that doctors are less likely to believe you when you tell them what's wrong with you.
Do you know that a symptom of perimenopause can be frozen shoulder?
What?
Yes, Erin, nobody knows enough. We
frozen
are not given enough.
Frozen shoulder?
Frozen shoulder.
It sounds like a cut of meat.
Yep. It basically, your arm basically feels like one when you have it.
I also heard this week from my doctor that a symptom of depression can be irritability and bouts of rage. Rage.
Who knew?
So if you are irritable, angry, and your shoulder feels like a hunk of frozen meat, you might want to talk to a doctor who takes perimenopausal symptoms seriously. And you definitely want to get screened for breast cancer using whatever resources are available to you. Okay, one more alert before we take a break. There is a Supreme Court election in the state of Georgia. A seat on the Georgia Supreme Court is up for grabs this May. While most judges run unopposed, Judge Andrew Pinson is the only judge of the four incumbents running that's getting a challenger. His challenger's name is John Barrow, which sounds like a Revolutionary War name. John Barrow is a Democrat, former House representative. He's hoping that he can unseat Mr. Pinson and capitalize on the energy that voters have against abortion bans. His election to the court won't change the court's conservative majority, but at least he will get the loneliest job in the world, being the only liberal judge on a court that is otherwise 100% conservative. But look, a journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single Democrat.
And who doesn't love an upset?
I think that these state-level races can kind of sneak up on you. We just had a special election in New York that flipped a seat to Democrat, right?
And yes.
Now Republicans only have a one-seat majority in the House.
Thanks, George Santos.
Which is very funny. I'm sorry. It's very funny. One-seat majority.
I mean, look, if nothing else, George Santos was a good wake-up call to the Democratic Party of New York State that they've been asleep at the wheel.
Yeah. He's bringing back his drag character, isn't he?
What?
I know, it makes him more likable is the thing. Like, he is so, he's so contemptible. He's such a liar, whatever. But, like, in drag, less so.
I mean, look, Aaron, do we need to know anything more about George Santos, that he made more money on Cameo than he did as a member of Congress?
No, I don't think we do. I don't think we do, but good for him. Get that money, Lady George Santos. All right. And Alyssa, just to tie this all up in a neat little bow, if you recall our wonderful guest, Arizona State Representative Lorena Austin, our associate producer Fiona just sent us a enraged, apoplectic tweet from the very conservative Speaker of the House in Arizona, who tweeted, "Democrat Rep. Lorena Austin deliberately misled House leadership to reserve a conference room to host a drag story hour with Planned Parenthood." So as a result, this fucking nerd, this nerd has banned Democrats from using the conference rooms in the Arizona State House.
You know what I'd love to know? Do you think this nerd was as upset about January 6th?
This is just like fucking baby
dumb
garbage. You
dumb
goddamn baby. Grow up. How are you so afraid? Like, they're so afraid. I cannot imagine going through life that terrified of people dressing in clothes that they personally wouldn't choose to dress in themselves. Or maybe that they very deeply want to dress in themselves but feel too repressed to dress in. I don't know.
You know what I don't want to dress in? Pleated khakis, Aaron.
Yeah, and you're not out here trying to prevent people hosting a pleated khakis story hour.
Just saying.
From using the conference rooms. All right, we are going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I feel petty. Welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast that has a computer, iPad, iPhone, Apple Watch, etc., but still takes notes on a notepad.
It's like me to a T.
That's called...
Are you trolling me?
That's called being...
Do I need to call out my note cards? Do I need to bring the note cards back?
You got master monocode.
Hold on. Wait. Here's my actual notebook.
Oh, my gosh. That's middle school core.
Of course it is, but I like it because I can bend it back and the spine doesn't break.
No, it's great. I respect a physical notebook. When I'm actually working on a writing project, I can't do it on a computer because it just...
No, I need to write it out.
I forget what I've written unless I write it with my hand. Anyway, okay, let's get to our announcements for the class before we move along to Sani Petty. Need a break from the political chaos? Treat yourself to some completely different political chaos over on Pod Save the UK.
Each week, hosts Nish Kumar and Coco Khan are joined by politicians and experts to unpack the latest news out of Parliament.
I have to say, Coco has one of the greatest speaking voices and accents.
The best.
In the game.
Can't get enough.
In the game. In addition to being informative, super interesting, and funny. Doesn't matter how far across the pond you are, it is great. New episodes drop every Thursday. Make sure to follow Pod Save the UK wherever you get your podcasts. Oh, Alyssa and I want you to know. I feel like a lot of sentences regarding the show could start with Alyssa and I. Your mother and I want you to know that we're not just disembodied voices with flawless opinions and incredible taste. We are also pretty faces. Sorry.
I have never been accused of having a pretty face. Sorry. Let's not take our word for it. Check us out on our YouTube channel where you can tune into our series, This Fucking Guy. Listen to us roast the people who deserve it most.
So you agree. You think you're really pretty. So you agree.
Now,
think you're really
totally
pretty.
I'm gorgeous.
Type hysteria into your nearest YouTube search bar and make sure to follow us so you never miss an episode. I swear to God, This Fucking Guy is going to be the death of me, but also it brings me the most joy. I feel like a classical composer when I'm writing some of these.
It is some of our greatest work.
Okay. Announcements made. It's just me and you, Alyssa.
It's just us.
I'm going to kick us off. Vice President and former California Attorney General and former Senator, and I'm saying all of these things because I just want to emphasize who she is. Okay.
Okay.
Kamala Harris was on Drew Barrymore's talk show.
Yep.
They discussed this on Pod Save America this week pretty extensively. The Biden administration seems to be trying to utilize non-traditional media to reach voters who are sick of political media, which appears to be a lot of voters. And I do not blame you as somebody who works in political media. So Kamala Harris was on Drew Barrymore's talk show.
Yep.
And
I saw it.
It was so weird. It was so weird. At one point, Drew, like, doing her cross-legged couch intimacy thing.
Yes.
With tears in her eyes, asked Kamala Harris if she would be our nation's mamala.
She did.
It was physical pain. Physical pain. What a weird thing to do and what a weird thing to say. I hated it so much. And I think Kamala hated it too, although she handled it with grace. I hated it. It's the worst thing I've seen all week. It was not good.
And the thing is, it is Drew's shtick. And I actually don't even mean that. That's kind of like not even, it's who she is, right? This is how she approaches things. This is how her whole show is. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if they thought that like Drew was going to morph into Katie Couric on this particular day. But this felt like what was probably going to happen.
Yeah, but the Mamala thing was just like, that's just not, you don't ask the most powerful black woman in America
and agree,
possibly the world, if she's going to be your mommy. It's just so cringe. It's so cringe. And I hated it. I hated it. And thinking about it right now, I am reliving the pain of watching it the first time.
I watched it in clips and it was very uncomfortable.
Yeah. Don't do that.
If
you get a chance to sit down with a powerful woman in the midst of a campaign, don't ask her to be your mom, unless she has explicitly offered in the past to be your mom. Then reference said conversation in asking her.
I agree. It was awkward.
It was awkward. It was weird. Alyssa, I'm glad you and I are on the same page there. I feel like a lot of people saw that and was like, what? I hate this.
I mean, I had to look away. It was no bueno.
No, it was no bueno. Okay, Alyssa, what's yours? Sanity corner or I feel petty?
Aaron, I have a sanity corner and it's weird.
Okay, good.
My sanity corner is that I think later in life, I've become weirdly obsessed with polygamy. Like, I don't understand it, and I can't get enough of it.
Okay.
So here's the thing. I know I've talked about the show Sister Wives before, but Erin, there's a new one for me. and it's called Seeking Sister Wife. And, okay, honestly, I can't believe I love it so much. It is such a viewing experience that my sister and I will text about what we're going to eat for dinner before we watch it. And we synchronize our watching so that we're watching it at the same time. And it's mostly because there's this one couple that's so totally fucking insane, Garrick and Danny. They've been on for 2 seasons. The first season, they were seeking sister wife, and it was Roberta, and she was from Brazil. This season, that didn't work out. This season, they are also seeking sister wife, also from Brazil, yet neither one of them have learned Portuguese in the last couple of years, right? God. So everyone's just like translating from Notes app. And Garrick, who is the weirdest, always is talking about God's plan. Everything is God's plan. And I feel like God wants to say to him, Garrick, get my name out of your mouth. I have got bigger fish to fry on this planet than you and your sister wife from Brazil. But anyway, I just can't help it. I love it. I think it is so fucking funny. I find the concept of multiple women wanting to live with a man so odd that I just can't stop.
Here's my thought. If you are, if the men are kind of trash, but there is no way to participate in society without hitching yourself to a man, polyamory or polygamy is like ideal because you have to deal with them less than you would.
You know what? I had never thought of it that way.
If it were just, if it were just one on one, like let's say, I don't know, if like I were a, if I were a queer woman living in, FLDS culture, and I just didn't want to have to, I wanted to have to deal with a man as little as possible, I would get into one of those like 25 wife situations. It's just like, okay, look, I have only bad choices here, only bad choices, and I'm going to choose the one where I get have to hang out with the dude the least.
That's, no, I agree. You know, and I think there's just something about, I try to watch television that doesn't give me night terrors. And there's just something so funny when I get a text from my sister that just says Garrick exclamation point. And I'm like, I haven't watched yet. Don't tell me.
Oh my God. You know, it's really funny that the people that are most interested in having like multiple partners and having that be a lifestyle are like cool Gen Z people and the biggest nerds on the planet.
It is. I wanted to share it because I don't know what it is about myself that has been fascinated with polygamy for like the last 10 years.
Hey, look, whatever works for you, whatever helps you blow off steam, that's what you've got to take advantage of it. The world is a lot to handle. And sometimes you just need something weird to fixate on.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Amazing. Okay, that's all the time we have for this week's episode of Hysteria. Listeners, if you want to get in touch, hysteria@crooked.com. I especially am interested this week in hearing from healthcare providers in Arizona and Florida. If you are an OBGYN or if you work in the birthing industry in any way, I would love to. How's everything going? Are you okay?
Tell us everything.
hysteria@crooked.com. You know, we'll keep what you want kept confidential, but we are just so curious about what your experiences are. I want to thank Representative Lorena Austin for joining us from Arizona this week. Alyssa, thank you for being my ride or die. Listeners, thank you for tuning in this week. There will be more Hysteria for you next week. Don't forget to follow us at Crooked Media on IG, Twitter, and TikTok. Subscribe to Hysteria on YouTube for access to video versions of your favorite segments and other exclusive content. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a nice review. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Reston is our senior producer. Our executive producer is me, Erin Ryan. And Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer. Fiona Pestana is our associate producer. The show is engineered and edited by Jordan Cantor. We get audio support from Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis. Our video producers are Rachel Gajewski and Megan Patzel. And thank you to Julia Beach, Ewa Ogulate, Adia Hill, and David Tolles for production support every week.